Hello and welcome to season 6 of the Wealthier Together podcast. It has been a while. During this season, we're going to focus on the importance of digestive health, digestion, and we're going to talk about a variety of different digestive health disorders. I'm also going to talk about the importance of hormones and the role it plays in the health of women who are 35 and over. And this includes hormones, digestive health, it also includes weight gain, and also energy levels. So keep an eye out for these different podcast topics. The first interview of this season goes in depth into the topic of diverticulitis and diverticulosis. So check out the podcast interview.
Terry Benjamin is a registered holistic nutritionist, and she specializes in diverticular disease management. She's also a certified master women's herbalist and a raw vegan chef. So welcome, Terry. How are you doing today?
Thank you so much. I am very well. Thank you so much, Blessing.
So can you tell us how you got into diverticular disease management? So we know there's a wide variety of different digestive conditions, and I wanted to do this series to talk with people who know a little bit more about specific conditions than I do. So I think it's great to do a deep dive and be able to ask those type of questions, those questions to someone who has that expertise. So how did you get into working with people that have diverticular disease?
Well, I was diagnosed with diverticular disease a few years ago. And when I had my diagnosis, I was already practicing. I actually used to work with clients in gut health, right? But not specifically diverticular disease. And I've struggled with chronic constipation from like when I was in my 20s, like from most of my life, I remember that I've been struggling with chronic constipation. And it was because of this that I started investigating and went into nutrition studies and all of that. And when I was like in my late 20s, I started having really bad cramping pains. And at first, the doctor said it was PID. I've had like so many misdiagnoses and so many, you know, going to different specialists. And after the PID diagnosis, they gave me a lot of antibiotics. So I was on antibiotics for like 2 months. Went back to another doctor and they were like, no, you don't have PID. You have an infection or something. Back on antibiotics. So I was back and forth on antibiotics for like a year. And I was like, you know what, this is not working out for me. So I finally went to a functional medical doctor and they were like, well, you know, do you struggle with constipation? And I was like, yeah. And they were like, well, this is what's going on with your colon. And they had me do like a colonoscopy. I did an MRI and I did some other tests, and they were like, well, this is your colon and this is a regular colon. And when I saw that and they explained to me like what was happening, I was like, oh my goodness, like all these years, the cramping pain, the chronic constipation, like I had no clue that this type of illness existed. Even though like I specialize in gut health, I never knew about that particular one, because in mainstream, we're taught, like in nutrition, in holistic nutrition, we're taught about SIBO, GERD, IBS, IBS-D, IBS-C. We're taught about constipation and diarrhea, but diverticular disease is something that I've never learned when I was in training. So finding out that I had that, I was like, oh my God, this is bad. And I started working on myself. And then while I'm working on myself, I started to record it and you know, share with persons. And persons started coming to me and they're like, oh, well, you know, I was diagnosed. My husband was diagnosed. This is happening. And so I said, you know what? Instead of working on gut health, why don't I specifically target diverticular disease and help these persons that are struggling? And that's how I streamlined everything into specifically diverticular disease.
So you have personal experience of going from doctor to doctor, which many people that have digestive health conditions do. So that's good. I think it's always good to get someone that actually understands it. So I do believe that, you know, having the expertise and learning about it and seeing patients is enough. But sometimes, you know, having or going to someone who's had it and has had those struggles and can help you manage it day to day because they actually live it is more helpful. And I think that that's kind of neglected in health. And I think it's a problem because, you know, the goal is to help someone heal mind, body, and soul. And so I think it's good to people also heal by relating to others. And then, you know, you have that hands-on experience that can guide them a little more than, oh, don't eat this or stay away from that. So I think it's always really good to get people that have that, the, you know, the educational knowledge and that day-to-day living it. And especially with a lot of the frustrations, because I'll get clients and they're like frustrated. And I'm just like, I understand that you're frustrated, but I mean, I understand, but I cannot, like, I'm not struggling with that same condition. So it makes a little bit, you know, it's a little bit different when you can connect on multiple levels, a patient or a client.
Yeah, that is so true. That is so true. Because when they come to me and they're frustrated, I can say, okay, you know, let's start small. Let's start here. What have you been trying? And I break it all the way down because I've been there. I know how hard it is to not eat for like 2-3 days, but you're still in pain, even though you're not, your digestive system is not working, physically stressed, but you're still in pain because of acids and, you know, you have to eat and you can't eat. It's just like, it's a crazy, crazy disease. It's a crazy disease.
So what is diverticulosis?
So diverticulosis is actually a condition where your sigmoid, the lower part of your intestine, your colon, where it has like little pouches in it, right? And science have found that there's actually about 65 to 70% of persons who already have these pouches, but it doesn't create a problem for them. And the other percentage of persons, the pouches, they become inflamed. So when the diverticula, which is the little pouches, when they become inflamed, then that is called diverticulitis. So you can have diverticular disease, but have no symptoms from it. You don't have any flare-ups or anything, right? And you wouldn't know that you have this illness unless you start to experience diverticulitis, which is the inflamed part of that colon, the inflamed part of your colon.
Okay, so the difference between those is the pouches are there and there you have no symptoms, but diverticulitis is when it is there and there's inflammation and you're definitely feeling those symptoms.
Correct.
So what are the most common symptoms of diverticulitis? Other than pain, are there any other symptoms just in case someone's like, I don't know if I have this, maybe, maybe not?
Yeah, you can have diarrhea, you can have chronic constipation. Like with me, because I've struggled with chronic constipation before, it's one of my possible symptoms. So what I do for that is I just make sure that I'm having a lot of fiber. Even though I'm vegan, I still eat. I still take supplement fiber. So I will take my supplemental fiber in the morning and in the evening just to make sure that I'm getting enough, a lot of fiber because of my chronic constipation. You can have nausea. You can have a lot of gas and bloating, cramping pain. Some persons can have blood in their stool, blood in their urine. And you can have fainty dizziness. You can have abdominal pain, like severe cramping abdominal pain, either on your left side. Most of the times it's on the right side, but some people also experience it on the left side. And then you can also have a lot of burning acid reflux. You can have a lot of burning sensation from the throat straight down. Like, I don't know if people with acid reflux have ever experienced that, but when you have diverticulitis, unfortunately, it burns. Sometimes it burns, especially when you're lying down. I guess the balance, the acids in your stomach can create a problem. So you can also have pain when you're moving. Like if you're working out, you're running, you're walking, you can have severe lower pain. Sex become non-existent if you're having a flare-up. Those are the most common symptoms.
Can diverticulosis or diverticulitis go away? Because I know that's a question that people have. Can it go away?
That is the thing. What I was told by my gastroenterologist and many studies that I've read is that once the pouches are formed, it's very hard for them to disappear. So the only thing that can happen, treatment possibilities, is surgery to cut off that part of your sigmoid that is the most inflamed and the most perforated with the pouches. You can focus on shrinking the pouches, and you can also focus on managing the pouches, managing your inflammation levels so that the pouches does not become stuck with undigested food, or you don't have, like, you don't consume your trigger foods, like a lot of fried junk food is a huge trigger. So that will fall under managing. But once the pouches are formed, I haven't seen any research or heard from my gastroenterologist that they can be, you can get rid of them. They do not go away.
So do they know why those pouches form in the first place? Are they genetic? Is it just a combination of, what is it? Or do they know? Do people know?
From studies have shown that it can be a combination of things. It can be genetic. It can be from medication. With me, I kind of pinned it down to two possibilities. It can be medication. It can be genetic. It can be chronic diarrhea or constipation. And it can also be lifestyle. With me, because I used to struggle, I struggle with chronic migraines, and I remember when I was a teenager and I would go to my neurologist, he always would say to me, no, you can't take uncoated medication capsules, pills, because it will mess up your stomach. And I never listened to him. I still would do it. If I'm in a lot of pain, I would still do it. So I think maybe that contributed to my situation. And then added with the chronic constipation.
And another thing, it's good that you touched on medications, because a lot of medications will cause chronic constipation. Like I know a lot of painkillers that people will take will cause constipation. Yeah. And even sometimes after people stop taking them, they still have that constipation. And I don't know, I'm always telling clients, like, read the side effects. It doesn't mean you can't take it. It just means that you have more awareness of what is going on in your body and how you're responding to whatever side effect it is. And some people will say, well, you know, this side effect doesn't, you know, it's a small side effect. It affects like just 1% of the population. But I'm like, that 1% of the population is really interested in that side effect. So I think it's important to just make sure anything you put into your body, I don't care what it is, you need to really be really mindful of that, especially since it's going straight into the digestive system. Straight in there. So anything that goes into your digestive system, especially if you start having digestive issues, we usually focus on antibiotics, but it's all the other pills that go into the digestive system and are broken down there.
Yeah. And one of the things that really sidewinded me was because it was over the counter, I thought that it was safe. And me being younger and not knowledgeable about the industry, I was just like popping them. Every time I felt a migraine, I would just pop. And because also I'm deadly allergic to a complete class of medications, so over the counter was kind of like the safest things that I could take. And if I have a migraine, if I wake up and I'm feeling that migraine, I would just start taking sometimes 6+ pills per day. And yeah.
Yeah, it's those over-the-counter medications that get you though. Like it's ibuprofen, Tylenol. I had a acquaintance that he hurt his ankle or something, and he was taking this, popping the ibuprofen. And I was like, you know, it says take with food, right? Like I was like, you may, it says take with food on the thing. I was like, read the bottle. Like, unless you want to add, you know, gastric ulcers to your list with your ankle pain, look at it. And he was shocked. He did look at it. I don't know what decision he made. You know, people are adults, but you really have to look at what it says on there and look at, you know, the limitations. But we do usually think that over the counter is safe. And I don't know why it's not vocalized a little bit more, because I think that that has probably caused or triggered quite a few different digestive complaints in people, if not full out conditions.
Yeah.
So how do you keep your diverticulosis under control?
Wow.
It's a deep one.
it is quite a challenge. And this is something that I manage every single day. Like my clients are always saying, oh, can we just tell us the one quick thing? And, you know, that will make it. I was like, you know what? It is work every single day. And the number one tip that I share with my clients is always be prepared. Always have healthy food in your bag. Like I have a big bag and I walk with snacks, healthy snacks, because you never know when you have to work late or you get called out. You're probably after work hopping, going out with friends or whatever, and there's nothing clean on the menu that you can eat and you're hungry. A lot of times persons who struggle with diverticulitis would rather not eat, but because you feel it, you feel everything, you feel the digestive thing process going on, and it's not a good feeling. It's just, it's pain, excruciating pain as it passes through the system. So we would rather not eat when we're having a flare-up, but the acids with on an empty stomach also creates huge problems for us. So always have healthy snacks, fruit, your nuts, anything that's clean and healthy, always have it on hand. And that's one of my number one tips. And that's something that I do every single day. I make sure that my refrigerator is stocked with healthy food so that I can grab and go. Stuff that I crave, like I like to have like pure, a little bit of pure chocolate. Can't have too much because, you know, the acidity of chocolate is a struggle. So just a little piece just to, you know, satisfy the cravings. Stress is also huge. So I practice meditation every day. I work out because mobility exercise is very important for constipation and also to help break down foods that are hard to digest. And it also helps moving your waste throughout the system. If you struggle with constipation, it's mobility is huge. I utilize exercise to help. Another thing that I do is I try to drink, to have at least one liquid day a week, and just to rest my system. I'd love to have a lot of liquid meals, whether it's a warm soup or smoothies, just to rest my digestive system. That's one of the key things that I do. Those things are life-saving when it comes to managing my diverticulosis. The other thing that I do not touch with a 10-foot pole is processed foods. That is one of my triggers. I can't have anything. If I happen, unfortunately, to have something that's processed today and it doesn't impact me tomorrow, I count myself as lucky. And immediately I go back on eating clean. The next day I immediately, you know, people always say, oh, can I have a cheat day? And I'm like, no, we don't have cheat days. We cannot. When you have been diagnosed with this disease, there's no such thing as a cheat day. Because if you happen to have like a piece of white bread, for me, I cannot have processed like white rice, white bread, anything like that. And sometimes I would go by my mom and she'd be like, oh, I made, my mom is Indian mix. So we Caribbean, we love rotis, we love curry. And my mom would be like, you know what? I made you some hot rotis. And I'll be like, oh my God, maybe I can just have a piece, just a small piece of this roti with just some curry. And immediately after eating it, bam, cramping pain. And then I'm like, oh my God.
What is a roti?
Oh, a roti is like, it's a flat bread, but it's really soft. It's kind of resembling of the Ethiopian, you know, the Ethiopian they have, I forgot what they call it, but it's like a flat pancake.
Mm-hmm, and I know what it is, yeah.
So it's a version, it's a version of that.
And is it processed?
It's made with flour, with wheat.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So I can't have wheat products at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's really good to know. So I'm assuming that people will have different sensitivities and tolerances to different foods, or is it just blanket?
Yeah, people would have, and that's something that I always say to people, because sometimes I would, like, if I'm doing a workshop or a masterclass or something, people will always say, oh, well, I can't have bananas. Okay, if bananas doesn't work for you, that is fine. You just substitute it with something else. I know people that can eat strawberries, but strawberries is also on the food map list of foods that you can't have if you have been diagnosed with diverticulosis. But I know persons who can have strawberries, right? And they would eat bowls and bowls of berries every single day and nothing happened to them. But then I have clients who, if they eat one strawberry or even half, they, you know, they're triggered. So we're all bio individuals, and what works for you may not work for me, and vice versa. And I always advise clients to focus on what works for you. If the food map foods, if they work for you, you're feeling better, you're getting relief, then stick with that. If they don't, then you can find something else that works for you.
I think it's good to talk about that, because some people will be like, well, I could eat this. And it's like, well, everyone else can't eat that. Just to kind of like know yourself and kind of like have a food journal and just write down what triggers you. So can you tell us a little bit more about what the FODMAP foods are? Because you've mentioned them a couple of times, just so people have a general idea.
Well, these are different, like you have like tomatoes, stuff that like the high fermentation, low fermentation, your nightshades. They create problems with some persons, not everyone. And they're not only useful for persons with diverticular disease, but other digestive illnesses, they're also useful. But once again, tomatoes, you know, the challenge with tomatoes for persons with diverticular disease is that the seeds get stuck into the pouches and creates inflammation. However, there's persons that can consume tomatoes and other, like eggplant, other nightshades or other high or low FODMAP foods and not have any challenges. So it's a whole list. There's a lot of foods on there, like different types of grains, there's different types of beans that you can consume. But then if you follow that strictly, you don't have a problem with any of them, then stick with it. But for persons who already have a restricted diet, like myself and other vegans or vegetarians or people who are paleo or keto, you know, you know, that can create a bit of a give and take. And I always advise my clients to be flexible, because if you're not flexible, then the practice will not be sustainable and you're not going to keep it up. If you're too rigid, you're going to get bored, you're going to get burnt out, you're going to, you know, it's not going to work.
And I'm sure it increases the temptation of eating something that's going to wreck you for a couple of days. So it's exactly. always it's always good to be very flexible. I tell yep. people, if you cannot keep up with it, let it go. Find yep. something else. Because people are like, oh, I'm going to do this. But then mm-hmm. life happens, like you were saying, making sure you have snacks. So it is, be very flexible. Be very, very flexible. So yeah. what is the best type of fiber to eat for diverticulosis and diverticulitis? So a lot of people are like, hey, can I not have any? And this is just like a general blanket question. People need to tailor it to their needs.
Yeah, people definitely need to tailor it to their needs. One thing that science has shown us is that our current diet, the Western diet, does not have enough fiber, amongst other things. It's lacking other things too. Right. So I remember my gastroenterologist when I told him that I was vegan, he's like, and you're not getting a lot of fiber? And I would give him an example of what I'm eating every day. And he's like, Terry, and you're still not getting enough fiber? You're still not going to the bathroom? I'm like, no, not really. And I was having smoothies, salads, fruits throughout the day, but it still wasn't a lot. It still wasn't enough for my body. And so that's when I started supplementing my fiber. So for me, what works is I use Benefiber, and I would just have like a tablespoon in the morning with some water, lots of water throughout the day, and a tablespoon in the evening with water, lots of water throughout the day. Another thing that I do every day is I try to have like aloe water. Aloe water is really good for cleansing the colon and for helping you to have like a bowel movement. It's also a mucilaginous, a mucus-forming friendly food. And so it helps to keep things moving. And that helps a lot. And it also works really well with fiber. So it helps the fiber to be more productive in the digestive system.
A question. I know that chia seeds are seeds, and the goal is to avoid them if you have diverticulosis or diverticulitis, but you know, they do form a gel, like it's soluble fiber. The thing is that you need to drink like ridiculous amounts of water, because that, like in people that don't even have any digestive conditions, that could cause some serious, you could create some issues. You could create constipation with that. So is that, with that, be something that someone could try, or no?
Well, I do chia seeds also. I do chia seeds also, but there's persons that can't.
Okay.
So I always recommend with my clients, I always say, try a little bit, maybe just a sprinkle of seeds, just a pinch in your water. And you have to remember to be hydrated throughout the day. Now, when I'm working with older clients who do not remember, because hydration is huge, it's a huge challenge for seniors. A lot of times they don't remember that they have to drink a lot of water. Chia seeds is not something that I would recommend for them, because you have to keep up with your water intake. But when I'm working with younger clients, I recommend you can just a little pinch in your water and just remember to hydrate.
That makes sense. Yeah, because if you're forgetting water, you're going to create some issues that you may not, like you just don't want to create. So you've mentioned a couple of foods that people should avoid. Are there any other foods other than foods that they know trigger them? Are there like some other foods? You said processed foods.
Mm-hmm.
Do spicy foods do anything? Are there any other?
I was just going to say spicy. Spicy foods, definitely. It's a no-no. If you can feel it burning, you know it's going to burn all on both ends, then no, is wreaking havoc in your system. So spicy foods, trigger foods, junk food, alcohol, caffeine, fried foods. Yes, fried foods. I need to stress that. Fried foods with all the trans fats and all of that. So fried foods is a definite no, because it solidifies inside of the intestines and it stops. It stops. It prevents your food from being properly digested. A lot of people think that It's fried, it's grease, it's lubrication, but it's a type of oils and the process that it goes through that robs it of the good fats. And once you're dealing with trans fats, which a lot of foods are fried in trans fats and, you know, the unhealthy non-food fats, it creates a problem in the digestive system.
Okay. You hit on caffeine because I know people are like, I got my coffee. So how do they, even though too much caffeine is not good for you, we do know there are people who cannot, for whatever reason, function without caffeine. So are there any substitutes for those people that are like, great, now I can't have coffee. Like, how am I supposed to function since it is a trigger? How do they work with that? Because, you know, people like that caffeine.
There's a few substitutions on the market. I've told my clients about Roma, which is a substitute. The brand is Roma. I don't know if you can find it in the US, but Roma, and you can use that as a substitute. Also, you can use, and this is a little, I don't know if people would go through the trouble, but if you are missing your coffee, you probably might. Okra seeds, if you roast them and grind them into a powder, we use it, and it's also used in Ayurvedic medicine. You can use it as a substitute. It gives you that coffee-like flavor and taste. I don't know if it will give you the high, but it does give you that caffeine taste.
Okay. Like, I know some people will say chicory root, and I've actually tried it and it does not taste the same. Mm-mm. That bitter aftertaste is a no-no, but I don't have to have coffee. So that's, you know, I don't have to have it. So I was like, this is no, because I saw this lady and she was like, I don't know, she did something. She got some certification and she was like, this is wonderful. It tastes just like coffee, just like coffee. So I was like, I'm going to try it. And I got it and I was like, no, this is bitter. This is real bitter. What are you going to do to the people that they have no other option? It was gross. But she was like, it's just like coffee. I don't remember the brand. I was like, no, ma'am, this is not like coffee at all. Maybe it's like, you know, people have different taste buds. I was like, this is gross. And so I had to throw the thing away because I wasn't about to use all of that. But anyway, and it wasn't cheap either. So test it out. If there's a small package, something, but it didn't taste like coffee to me. But we're just trying to get some alternatives because some people have to have that caffeine. And, you know, even if you're going to wean off, you still need something to wean off. I mean, cold turkey doesn't work for most people. So, you know, be careful with those promises of, oh, it tastes just like it, or it's, you can't tell the difference. Careful with those. But if you develop a fondness of chicory root, you go ahead with that. Whatever works for you.
Yeah, that is true. Whatever works for you, whatever helps.
So you touched on stress, and we know that stress does aggravate all conditions, all underlying conditions, and definitely anything that has to do with the digestive system. So what are some ways that if someone is triggered, you know, stressful day at work, kids, you know, life, mm-hmm. what are some ways they can, in the moment, try and tone down that stress or cope with it in a way that they can kind of help their digestive system calm down or decrease their symptoms?
In the moment, breath work, deep breathing, because your gut health is also connected to your neurological and your mental health. And studies show that breathing, breath work helps to stimulate neurologically to help calms the nervous system. So you can just practice some deep breathing and set it on your phone, or just have like a deep breathing session, and that will help to calm you down, and it will also help to alleviate the stress buildup in your stomach, your gut health.
That's definitely good, because I know if someone has just been diagnosed, they're probably like, so first I have this diagnosis, that's stressful. Now I got to pack fresh fruit everywhere I go. And I, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot for someone who is, you know, not, it's new and it's just stressful. Anyway, like you're talking about going from doctor to doctor, all of that is stressful. So it just adds on to the, hey, I got to do the day to day and mm-hmm. change up the pattern and make swaps and test this and that. So I just wanted to make sure I touched on that. So how do you recover from a flare-up? And I don't know if we touched on this before or not. Like, do you have any go-to things? You said you have a liquid day. What is that composed of? Like, how do you...
Okay. The concept with a liquid day is just to help your digestive system to relax, right? It's to help the digestive system to relax and to help the inflammation, because inflammation is a natural process in our body. It's an immune response. You cannot live without inflammation. The thing is when it's so overwhelming that your body cannot process it. So the liquid day helps to keep the inflammation at safe levels, and it just gives your gut some time to relax. You know, your gut works so hard because it's not only part of your immune system protecting your body from pathogens and bad bacteria and all that stuff, but the food that we put in it, it's a lot of work to break it down because it has a lot of toxins, chemicals, all kinds of stuff. And so if you just think about the gut having to do that every day, several times a day, because there's persons who eat throughout the day and your gut has to do that, it's a lot of work that it has to do. So the liquid day is designed just to give it some time to stop, to relax. I also do a lot of meditation and just take it easy on that day to help not only my gut, my digestive system, but neurological system, because they're both connected. So the liquid day for me will look like, and it looks differently because I design liquid days for my clients also based on their needs, based on if they have any pre-existing conditions. Obviously, someone who's diabetic, you will have to create different meals for them because they have to have their insulin levels balanced, right? For someone like myself who's anemic, my meals will look different because you have to make sure that they're getting enough iron and the iron is bioavailable. If that person is menstruating, you have to make sure that their meals are different. So the liquid days look different. An example would be smoothies, soups, lots of pureed soups, and lots of juices. And make sure that each meal has in enough calories to help sustain you, because that's also important. A lot of times people will just say, oh, I'm doing a cleanse. And then before the end of the day, they have serious headaches, they're, you know, nausea, diarrhea, chronic constipation. All that stuff is dangerous if you have certain pre-existing conditions. So designing a liquid day is important that it's properly designed. It's just not, I'm going to have like juices for the whole day.
Okay, so people have to be strategic and make sure that they're getting enough nutrients. So really making sure, because, you know, you got to make sure, because your blood sugar, even if you don't have diabetes, your blood sugar is going to be going crazy. And then people don't realize that the pancreas is still part of the digestive system. It is an accessory organ, still part of that whole system. So it really is important. And I think it's good that you mentioned that. Do you have any like recipes or anything that people can look at, or that can they contact you if they
They can definitely reach out to me. I do cooking demos, recipes. I provide like a full service for my clients. So they can definitely reach out to me if they need assistance with that. Okay.
Yeah, because that's good. We want to make sure that you are not starving yourself and calling it a liquid day.
Yeah.
Not fasting. Liquid day is not fasting.
No, it is not. It is completely different.
How long does a flare-up usually last? And I'm sure this is, you know, this varies based on individual, but how long typically for you does a flare-up usually last?
When I was first diagnosed, it would last for like 1 to 2 weeks because I was still learning on stuff that I can eat, like what was going on. I was learning. Now it lasts, it varies from like, I would say 4 days, 3 or 4 days to like a week. If I'm really disciplined, like three days.
Okay. Yeah. And that's a long time to not eat, especially if you haven't, you know, created and crafted your liquid days. That's a long time.
3 days?
No, like you said before, you said the 1 to 2 weeks. That's like for someone who's new, that's a really long time. So you got the pain, you can't eat anything, and then you're hungry. Like hangry is a real thing. It's real. It's very real. So you got, you know, that's a lot.
During that time, I was just following my doctor's orders, and my doctor's just like, make sure my smoothie is clear. So focus on fruits that doesn't have a lot of seeds in it and different things. And I used a lot of sea vegetables because I'm anemic. I needed iron and to do build my blood, and I couldn't, you know, it was just a mess. Like, because my doctors would say to me, well, Terry, you have to have bone broth, you know? And I'm like, well, I'm vegan. And they were like, well, you can't be vegan. You can't, just forget about that for now. You got to focus on eating and not going into an anemic coma or anything. Focus on. And so it was not a good time for me. It was horrible, actually.
Yeah, and that does add like an extra level of complication and restriction. Yeah, because, you know, most people would just say, yeah, just go get some bone broth and just down it. They have vegetable broth, though, right? You could, yeah.
Yeah, but then the vegetable broth, remember, it doesn't have enough nutrients in it.
That's just true.
Just like that. And I need iron. I need a lot. So it was a challenge. And then they wanted me to have just clear liquids, just drink it all day, every day. Whenever I'm hungry, I just need to drink my broth, and that's it. And I was so hungry. And then migraines started because I wasn't getting enough iron. And I was like,
it's definitely important to know yourself and know your restrictions. Cause yeah, you have several, like it's like anemia.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. Yeah. That does make it quite complex. Yeah, that's true. Oh goodness, but you have a system now, so that's good. It's good to get that system, but I don't think the gastroenterologists are really even trained in that, and that's why I thought it would be really good to interview you, because at least you know, like, the, you know, you are vegan, and then you do have it under, I won't call anemia an underlying condition. I mean, I guess it is. It's there. But, you know, like, just so people can know that, yeah, I can still maneuver this. Like, it is possible. I think that makes it a little bit easier. Because if you go to the gastroenterologist, they're like, I told you to take those clear liquids. And, yes. Like, that's it. Like, very few of them also are functional medicine practitioners. And if they are, they are booked. They are, like, booked out, like, months, even a year. So I think that really is important to know that. So anyone watching, you can do it. If you're vegan, whatever other conditions or restrictions you have, it is doable. You just got to go through the process of eliminating, and, you know, you have to make it work for you. And again, like you were saying, you have to be very flexible.
Yeah.
So how can listeners find out more about you?
I am on Instagram. I am on Facebook. So they can reach out to me at chic_gourmet_tortola. And that's my Instagram handle. And it's also my Facebook page. So once you get me on Instagram, I'm more active on Instagram, actually. So Instagram is the best place to find me.
And do you have one tip, one must-have tip for any listeners out there who are either newly diagnosed or who have had diverticulitis for a while? One go-to tip that they need.
Stay away from processed food.
That's a good one.
No, because the danger with processed food is that there's so many secrets inside. There's so many additives that can cause problems after you've eaten it, that can stick all over or cause your intestine to lose lubrication and all kinds of stuff. So it's just like, stay away. Just don't eat them. Do not. Just stay away.
They got to process through that addiction, because it's addictive. And once they process through that addiction, then they can find the alternatives, because that's the problem. Those additives, in addition to killing the beneficial bacteria, because it's basically an antibiotic, just without the name. And then, you know, so it's addictive. So it's playing on the brain, which that's a whole nother issue. We could be here for hours. Yeah. So it's just that, I think that's the biggest issue that people have. It's so addictive. And like, kids start eating it so early that it's difficult. You know, and then when you have to, I can't imagine like the torment, like, oh, but I want it and I can't have it. Like, just, but I agree with you. Stay away from the processed food.
Yeah. That's the best thing. You don't have to think about it. If you see it, just say, okay, no, I'm going to purchase some fresh greens or something. And it's easier if you have a flare-up. You can then you can decipher what caused the flare-up. If you've had processed food, it's more challenging for you to break that down by ingredients to see what caused the flare-up there.
That's true. That's true. It does make it easier to determine, hey, you know, it's a strawberry, you
Yes.
know, versus, yeah, that's true. That's true. Either way, anything with the body, especially the digestive system, because it works so hard, is going to be a process. So, unfortunately, there are no quick fixes here. But as Terry has shown you, it is doable. You can manage it. It's just process, patience, and flexibility.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the Wealthier Together podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes and share this podcast with a friend.